Hi, friends. Welcome to another episode of the Yelp Tampa Bay podcast. My name is Brett Nels. I'm the community director for Yelp here in Tampa Bay. And I'm excited today to be talking to the unofficial mayor of downtown St. Pete and Central Avenue, Andy Salyards. That's how you say your last name.
Yeah, Salyards. Okay. You got to say it a little lazily.
Salyards. Gotcha. So I actually have, to start things off, pulled up a message from a Yelper named Andy S. from Indian Rocks Beach, Florida. This message was sent sometime way back in the year 2012. Mm-hmm. It says, hey, Brett, I'm a partial owner of a barbecue restaurant back in California and was thinking of starting another one out here in the St. Pete area. Once I get it up and rolling, can I invite you and your group out over for a soft opening of sorts? Thanks, Andy. So at that time, you were just a guy living or maybe recently moved from California, about to move from California, and hoping that this little barbecue joint was going to work out for you.
Right.
And now we're sitting here at Urban Creamery. You're soon to be your fourth business to open since that time. Like, how did you go from that to this? It's crazy.
It is pretty crazy. It's a lot of fortunate stuff going my way. I really good people that I've been able to associate with and that have come on board and kind of bought into what we're building at Urban. And a lot of dedication on their part, a lot of hard work on their part, and then a little bit of blind luck in coming into St. Pete at this time, coming into the Grand Central District. I wanted to have a place in an area that had soul, and around town and around the greater Pinellas area, I thought the Grand Central had that, had a lot of character, a lot of individuality. And so that's why we chose it. But by no means do we have any idea that it would grow at the rate that it's grown. And we've just been really fortunate.
Yeah, it's nuts. So at that time, you had a barbecue restaurant in California.
Yeah, Salty's Barbecue out in Bakersfield. And now he actually has, my cousin owns it. He has two of them now.
Nice. So what brought you here? I mean, why did you even want to move to the Tampa Bay area?
My wife's job. So my background is in engineering and facilities management and being a merchant marine. And we moved out here, and I was working remotely in California, going back every month for about a week at a time. And my cousin opened his restaurant up, and it's a different style. It's more California barbecue. It's more of the red and white checker kind of picnic tables. And excuse me. I knew I had to get to the point where I was working here, and so I had to either find a job or create one, and I did not want to try to find a job at all. So I was trying to figure out what I could do on my own, and having the opportunity to work with my cousin in California, see if there's a business I wanted to get into, kind of reassociate myself with the restaurant industry because I hadn't served since I was in college. And I think my level of naiveness at the time is also kind of attributed to what we've been able to do, because knowing what I know now and going into it with as little as I knew then, I don't know if I would have done it over yeah. again. You know, I've learned a lot of stuff along the way, made tons of mistakes. But we've been able to kind of learn from those and keep on building.
So when you were thinking about doing this, mm-hmm. what was kind of your worst case scenario and best case scenario for how you saw it playing out?
My wife and I positioned ourselves so that we cut down all of our expenses so we could live solely off of her income. And so if we went out and we spent our savings and didn't make a dime, I knew personally that we weren't going to be living in the streets. Mm-hmm. It would definitely hurt, but at the same time, I'd always wanted to do something on my own, and I didn't want to be 20 years down the road and regret never even tried. So the downside, yeah, pretty bad downside, like losing all my retirement that I had saved and then all yeah. the money we had aside. But the upside was so much bigger, so we went for it.
But in your wildest dreams, did you imagine that you'd be opening at least
No, not even close. Not even close. Yeah, this is so far. Like, even 2 years ago, the guys over at Brewfab that made our brew equipment for Urban Comfort and that make a lot of equipment in the state of Florida, joked with me, like, hey, when are you going to buy a 7-barrel system? And I looked at them like, you guys are crazy. Like, I would never even buy something that big. If anything, it'd be smaller, but I still wouldn't do that. And now we have a 7-barrel system at Urban Comfort, and we're buying more tanks, and it's crazy.
It is crazy. In addition to, you know, having barbecue, Southern, I mean, provisions is kind of its own category, and then now an ice cream place. You know, not only are you having to deal with the product and hiring people and managing people, but even something as basic as just like taking over these old buildings that whatever they used to be and doing the design. I would imagine you probably have a love-hate relationship with that. You have to love it a little bit because you keep doing it.
So what I'm passionate about is building, and that's people, processes, and products. That's what I enjoy building, and more my job is turning into building people. When it comes to the design and taking over space and figuring out what to do with it, I do enjoy that a lot. It's almost like I don't have enough time to do it because I'm covering other areas. But with managing the so many different moving parts, I think total we're up to about 35 or 38 employees now across the different businesses. One of our fundamental missions as Urban overall is to make this an employee-owned business. And so at least one of the employees so far has kind of stepped up into that realm and has an equity stake. And there's quite a few more that are in line for the next round that are going to have that opportunity. And it ties into this whole movement we're seeing in the food where it's eat local, drink local. And there is some benefit from that in knowing that the products that you're consuming are grown around that area, but also the money that you're spending at that establishment is staying in the community. And another facet of that is when you walk into your regular spot, you want to recognize the person that's serving you or that owns the business as well as they recognize you. And so by putting these employees in a position where they're not working for the paycheck, they're working because they own part of it, they have skin in the game, that satisfies me from a strategy perspective, but way more on the side of if someone's doing a great job and they're really dedicating themselves, they need to be rewarded for that. They need to be compensated for that. And having a stake in it says so much more than just a paycheck.
That's really cool. I had no idea that you were doing that. And I think that more people need to do that, to be honest with you. And also, for your own sanity, it allows you to be able to take a step back a little bit because you know that these people are giving it, they have so much at stake. And you know that there's not going to be a situation where if you actually want to take a vacation that you can leave. And like these people are working for almost essentially their own business at this point, and they're not going to cut corners. So what was each one of these buildings prior to you taking it over?
Urban Barbecue had been a place called the Brownback Cafe for years. And then it was a series of different little restaurants. The most recent one before us was a place called Picnics and More. It was also a barbecue place for about 2 years. Urban Comfort was originally a Standard Oil building, and that's why the IPA that we just released is called Urban Standard. And after that, it was an office building selling oil, and then it was a car wash place. So it's been cool with Urban Comfort. We renovated the building, and we've had people come in saying, oh, my dad worked here in the 70s, like earlier than that, and bringing pictures of the people that used to work there and describing how the facility used to look. Urban Provisions was a couple different restaurants before that, and then Urban Creamery was an artist loft, a retail store, and most recently a juice bar.
So clearly there's not just a blueprint of, like, I like to take over these kind of places.
Right. I mean, having a hood in the space is definitely a great thing. But St. Pete's growing so much, you know, good luck finding a facility that's restaurant ready, because restaurants aren't really failing that much here anymore. At least you can make it regardless. And so what we're seeing is that more and more people are having to go into spaces that weren't restaurants. And that's what Urban Comfort was. It essentially was an old gas station building with nothing else, and so we redid all the systems, had installed the hood, and built a brewery there. And Creamery, it doesn't have a hood, and it won't ever have a hood because it's in a historical building, so we can't add one, and that's why we are going with an ice cream shop and dessert Belgian waffle.
Speaking of the you love doing the construction and the building, I remember one of the things that you were most proud of was the bathroom floor at Urban Brew with the Pennies. Can you tell us about that?
So with Urban Brew and Barbecue, my wife and I had always thought about having our own pub at the end of our careers where it wouldn't matter if it made any money. It'd be more kind of a place to hang out and have friends hang out. And so whenever we'd travel for her work or on vacation or whatever we were doing, we would kind of take mental notes of things that we saw that we liked about places. So in Detroit, there's a place called Vincetta Garage that I think Kid Rock owns part of it. But their floors, they did in Pennies. And I always kind of take the approach that if you go into a place and their bathrooms impress you, then you don't need to worry about anything else. So with the bathrooms, I wanted to make an impact. And so we had the Penny ideas. And I'm not OCD by any means, but I guess I probably have tendencies that are in that way.
Uh-huh.
And so with the Pennies, it's like, well, I don't want to just put Pennies down. And so that's why in the men's, they were all heads up and all pointing south because the Penny is Abraham Lincoln. I'm big into history, so the symbolism with Lincoln and the South. And then the bathrooms, they were all tails up, so Lincoln couldn't see anything. And then we did diamond-shaped patterns based on the patina of the Pennies. It took like 30 hours or something to lay those Pennies down in a total square footage of like 20 square feet or whatever it is. It was very tedious.
Did you have some moments of regret while you were doing it?
Yeah, but once you're halfway through, what are you going to do? You know, then you're just forced to finish, so...
I don't think you're alone in that opinion. We actually just had a Yelp event on Thursday night, last night when we're recording this. And one of the reviewers, even though it was at like a medical office, she said, I went to the restroom just to check it out because I like to go see how the restroom is.
Yeah.
And that really is a good gauge of how business is in terms of a lot of different things. And also we have our annual Yelpies, which people vote on and determine like best burger, best this, best that. And one of them is best bathroom. And I always kind of feel like it's strange to give that award to a restaurant, especially when you walk in with the framed award and say, hey, you guys have the best bathroom. But I believe Oxford Exchange won it this year. But, you know, maybe people will hear this and pay more attention to yours. Man, I have so many questions because you have just so many different kinds of businesses. So I guess I'll go that route. What made you go from barbecue to Southern? I guess that's a pretty easy transition. But yeah, what was your mindset?
All of these businesses, the common theme is the urban brand. And so I guess what you're really asking about is what is the definition of the urban brand? To me, it is American food done well, done simply. And so, you know, growing up, barbecue is one of my favorite things. It wasn't always readily available. But what I really grew up with was my grandma from Arkansas's fried chicken and my grandma from Oklahoma's fried pork chops. And I think as far as an emotional tie to food, that's the strongest tie I have. And it's because that, you know, food is family, food is memories. And so putting that food on a plate for someone else connects me with a customer stronger than I can ever be connected. Because in some of the recipes we have in the restaurants, like the sweet potato souffle at Urban Barbecue, that's a dish we used to make for Thanksgiving in my family's house. Now we tweaked the recipe because one year we went to Savannah and we had souffle up there. And I was like, well, this is better. So I need to come back and tweak some things. But, you know, there's a lot of, I guess, me and my family behind the styles of food. Now, what's cool about, because by no means does urban equal Andy and Andy equal urban. You know, urban is its own thing, and there's a lot of people behind urban, especially with our goal in the next 5 years of really incorporating all the employees in equity positions. Since we've kind of extended our base, now we're bringing in other people's kind of memories of food and their emotional ties to it. So I didn't grow up curing meats, you know, that we serve at Urban Provisions. It's something I enjoy doing. But that kind of ties into all of our desire to really peel stuff back to a base level. So, yeah, we can buy bacon that's cured somewhere else, but we can also make it ourselves. And it's really not that hard. Just got to learn how to do it and dedicate the time and the discipline to do it. Same thing with ham. Same thing with Canadian bacon. You know, all these different meats. It's not anything that's complicated. You just got to want to do it and kind of buy into that philosophy. Ice cream, who didn't grow up eating ice cream, you know? The excuse me, the revolving ingredient with all these is really it's comfort food. You know, it's not fine dining. The care and the approach to it sometimes can be more from that area of fine dining, and that we, you know, buy local fresh produce and really, again, go back to those base elements. But the I guess the driving thing behind any style of food that we do on an urban brand is we want you to have a meal and then leave with a smile.
What type of barbecue do you consider yours? Because I know that can be a very specific thing
for
people.
So there's obviously a ton of different regions. You have Texas up into kind of southern Oklahoma. Kansas City has its own style. Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, then Memphis is different than that. Florida is actually the place where barbecue, quote unquote, began. The Spanish came over in the 1400s or whatever it was, saw Indians smoking fish over on green limbs, and so that was like the first recorded instance of barbecue. Florida doesn't get any credit for that, but that's the reality. And I don't think Florida has its own kind of its style of barbecue is not recognized like a Memphis style. And we have a lot of, you know, 1 in 3 people, I think, that live in the state are actually from the state. We have a ton of transplants here. Plus, you know, Florida is a pretty broken up region in that you have Southern Florida, Mid Florida, and then North Florida, and there's really 3 different areas. If we had to claim one style of barbecue, I think it'd probably be closest to Memphis. We wanted to create dishes that didn't rely on the sauce, where the sauce is a nice to have, but it's not a necessary. So a lot of our work went into the rub and then how we smoke it and how we treat the meat before smoking and then even after smoking. But the sauces that we have, the sweet, tangy, spicy, that's where you can get really specific with regions. You know, we don't have a mustard-based sauce. We did have one for a little while. Just folks weren't as interested in that, and so we discontinued it. You know, why make something that folks aren't going to eat? So the sauces, I think, are less Memphis, but the ideal of making barbecue that doesn't require sauce is probably where we'd be.
So you changed it up a bit from Salty's in California.
Yes. So Salty's California barbecue is all about tri-tip over oak fire on a Santa Maria grill, as well as barbecue chicken, or excuse me, grilled chicken, not smoked chicken, beef ribs, because California is a big cattle state. A lot of people don't know that. So the focus out there is much more on beef and chicken, and you serve the tri-tip with salsa. It's fantastic. I would love to try it out here. I just don't know how receptive folks would be to it. But yeah, it's a completely different style.
How do you deal with the critics that come in and say, well, you know, I like this kind of barbecue, and this is the only kind of barbecue that I like? And I'm sure, you know, you get that maybe in person on Facebook comments, mm-hmm. and dare I even say on in Yelp reviews.
Yeah. So that part of the job, I don't think you can ever prepare yourself for. I've learned to deal with it a lot better now. And for me, fortunately, it's that part of the job has been a lot more gratifying than it has taken away from the whole experience. And it was like Ronnie Dunn, I think, from Brooks and Dunn, talked about, I forgot what he titled it, something like the Problem of One or the Problem of 10,000. And he was speaking to playing a concert for 10,000 people, and everyone's having a great time except for one person that's sitting in their seat. And he'd find himself trying to get that one person to have a good time and then divert more energy to that one person when there's 9,999 other people that are enjoying what he's doing, and maybe he should really be putting his energy into them. You're never going to make everybody happy. What's tough to do is when you put everything you got into something and then someone rejects it. And sometimes, a lot of times, their rejections are fair. And what I try to tell my folks is when you have a negative review or a negative comment, regardless of how it's presented by that person, there's probably a string of truth in there somewhere. So figure out what that string of truth is and make that a productive experience and learn from it. And let's tweak something if we need to tweak it. But I cannot explain enough the anxiety of having to open Yelp in the morning in the beginning and see if it was a negative review or a positive review. the impact, how much people can impact a business owner's life or someone that's working in the kitchen or the front of the house with a really like kind of flippant remark. And we've tried very hard to respond to everybody's praise and criticism. And there's been a couple of people that I've called out because of the language that they used or personal attacks. But for the most part, the platform that Yelp provides in providing communication between the customer, the consumers, and the business owner is invaluable. And it's just another avenue to have a community around what you're doing. Something I do pay attention to is the amount of reviews that we have for Urban Brew and Barbecue. It's been open 2.5 years, and I haven't looked in a couple months, but I think it's the 6th or 7th most reviewed restaurant in St. Pete. And of those 6 or 7 restaurants, it's the youngest. I don't know exactly why we get reviewed so much. I think it definitely helps us, and I think it allows us to have a dialogue with our customer. I think I totally started answering another question than what you originally asked.
No, I love it.
Yeah, went off track there. But I can remember a couple times with Barbecue and Comfort when, more so Barbecue, when people come in and they genuinely like what you're doing, it was a very emotional experience because you're so exposed. And especially when you're coming from a place where you're tying that food to family memories, and because now you're really letting everything out there. And then when someone comes in and they taste it and discard it or have something hurtful to say about it, it's hard not to take that really personally. And over time, with how we've been able to grow the business and stuff, you gain that confidence and you're not as self-conscious about what you're doing. And so someone can say a flippant remark and it roll off your back a little bit. But that's a dangerous spot to be in, because if you get too confident and you don't listen to what people are saying, then you're going to expose yourself to making not so good stuff.
I think you have an extremely healthy outlook on it. You can imagine my inbox and what it looks like from time to time when I get, you know, business owners that do sort of live and die with every review.
Yeah.
And they get really high about a good one and they get really low about a bad one. And I can't stress enough to anyone who reaches out to me and saying it is such a marathon more than a sprint, and you really can't let one review one way or another affect you too much, especially considering, you know, it's Yelp's model is so different than the food critic model, who it's like a one voice thing.
Right.
This is a community aspect, and if like no Yelper goes on and just says, oh, well, this place has really great reviews, but 3 people hate it, so I'm not going there.
Right.
Because they'll just be looking all day until they find the business that doesn't exist that has nothing but 5-star reviews and everybody thinks it's the most amazing meal of their life.
And what's funny about that is, you know, I use Yelp when I'm going to other cities and stuff. If I see a place that has, say, like 20 5-star reviews, I'm like, oh, like, let's check this out. But if I see a place that has 150 5-star reviews, I'm like, something's up there.
Yeah.
I don't know if I trust that, you know.
It's very rare to maintain popularity and universal love. And what happens, too, a lot of the time, for example, speaking of food critics, Laura Riley came out with her list like this past week of her top 52 restaurants in Tampa Bay. And Ava was number 1 last year, and it didn't even make her top 50 list this year.
Wow.
So there, you know, there's definitely quite a swing involved there from year to year. But at any rate, getting back to, I do want to ask you one more question about the barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that maybe a Yelper that has been a little bit overly critical or harsh in the past, it might kind of bring some light to like what goes into having a barbecue restaurant. What is the longest amount of time or the most labor that goes into a certain meat?
So something that sets our approach to barbecue apart is the use of our smoker. So a traditional barbecue place, and now you just opened a Pandora's box of barbecue history here. So, you know, we already talked about how barbecue started with fish on sticks, and then in the South it evolved into ditches, putting the hogs in the dishes over warm coals, and in the Southern antebellum days, the slaves would tend the fire all night, and then when they had a barbecue, that wasn't so much in reference to the food as reference to like a celebration day. And so barbecues would last all day, and just tons of beer, tons of wine, liquor. And the expression, living high on the hog, comes from the good cuts of meat, the loin, because that's the most tender part of the pig, would go to the house owners or the elite. And then the rest of the pig would go to the folks that got the scraps. So pork belly, you know, that's as low as you get on the sow. The ham hocks, that's low on the pig. From there, involved in the 50s with Kingsford coming out, with charcoal coming out, was just really an offshoot of the Ford Motor Company because he had all this extra wood and stuff for his chairs. He didn't know what to do with it, and so they made charcoal, and then boom, you have a whole other industry. You have all the GIs coming back from the war and wanting to have the American dream on the suburbs, and so they pushed the crap out of home barbecue and home grilling. Then that evolved into making barrel smokers and that getting more and more sophisticated, where we have a Lang smoker out of Georgia. These guys have been doing it for 30-something years, maybe longer, and they really do have it down to a science. You can't just take a cylinder, stick a firebox on it, and expect to get the same results. There's a lot of engineering and trial and error that goes into it. And the last evolution, or the latest evolution, is electric smokers or gas-powered smokers that are inside a kitchen. And some of these have rotisseries. They're automated with the time. You can stick thermometer probes in them. The main point of cooking something low and slow is to get it to a temperature, not where it's done, but where it breaks down the fats and the sinews inside of the meat so that it's tender but not dried out. And so when you're talking about brisket and pulled pork, that temperature range is somewhere around 200 to 210. You know, I'd prefer it to be right at 205. But you don't have to cook beef past 145. So you overshoot your mark so much, you know, and the time length does matter too, because you can cook brisket to 205 degrees in an hour and a half, and it's going to be like shoe leather. You really have to spend the time to break down that stuff. So what differentiates us from what we would consider traditional barbecue, where you're smoker outside and all that, is when you smoke inside with electric smoker or a gas smoker, you're not dealing with wind direction. You're not dealing with wind speed. You're not dealing with radiant heat from the sun. You're not dealing with ambient air temperatures. You're not dealing with humidity. As well as when you cook your big cuts, like your brisket and your pulled pork, traditionally you cook those all day, and then you close your business, you cool that meat down, and the next day you warm it back up and serve. So anytime that you have to cool meat and heat meat, it's going through, it's contracting and expanding, and you're breaking down that muscle, as well as you're losing a lot of moisture, and so you're hurting your product. So what we do at barbecue is, before we close at night, we stick our brisket and our pork shoulder into the smoker, smoke that all night, so when we come the next day, it goes right into warmer, it gets wrapped, and then we start our chicken and rib, so right when we open, everything's fresh. And then we also do in batches, so to get like really detailed, brisket is two different muscles, a point and the flat. The point is really fatty, and then the flat is the leaner cut. So for folks that are familiar with burnt ends, that comes from the point. And what folks that make that is they leave those two pieces of meat together, they smoke it, and since the point is a little thinner in parts, it gets a little charred, and so you cut that section off and you make your burnt ends out of it because it's burnt. And so when people ask, like, hey, you guys do burnt ends, like my smart aleck remark is that we don't burn our meat, so no, you know. but we separate the point and flat before smoking, and we smoke those points overnight because they hold up better since the fat content's higher. And in the morning, we'll put in our flats, so right when they come out, they're ready to go, and it's still nice and really moist. And those are things that we've kind of evolved over time and learned. But like, you know, full disclosure, when we opened up, I'd experimented a lot with ribs and chicken and pulled pork, but not really that much with brisket. So I was just finding my way through the dark. And some of the things that we do isn't because I learned them from someone else. It was just fiddle forking around and experimenting. And like, we tried stuff with like rendering down beef fat and injecting it and seeing if that could retain more moisture. And so you throw a bunch of stuff on the wall and see what sticks. And that's what stuck for us.
You made me feel really bad about my own barbecue. Like, I'm thinking about having some people over to my house for the Super Bowl. I might just cater it now. I don't think about the science, man. I just like throw it in the oven, throw it in the grill, and then like hopefully people like it. And it's mainly because I just totally douse it in sauce and hide all my imperfections.
But there's a big difference between cooking barbecue at home and then cooking it for a restaurant, because we can't predict whether we're going to have 100 people coming for lunch or we're going to have five. And so we've got to cook for the masses and employ techniques that allow us to put out a consistent quality product. So if we were focused on just serving 50 people at lunch every day and that's all we did, I think we probably could have a better product. But if we just focus on that, then dinner time your food's going to suck. You know, it's a give and take there. So we have to fashion what we do towards the restaurant industry, not towards like competition cooking.
But do you cook for people when they come over to your house?
So rare now, man. So my wife and I, we have a 9-month-old, and so he's starting to eat what we eat, and so we're being very conscientious about what we are making at home, even though he did get to taste some salted chocolate chip ice cream. That was a sample for Creamery the other night.
Is he the taste tester that approves things?
No, that's my wife.
Okay.
My wife has a crazy good palate, and If I can make my wife happy with a dish, then I'm totally confident in it.
Nice. So for people that, you know, I think at this point, Brew and Barbecue is kind of a mainstay here. Urban Comfort's been around for several months now, almost coming up on a year-ish?
It opened in late June.
Okay. So Provisions is relatively new.
Yeah, just a couple months.
Yep. And so what can people find at Provisions?
Provisions, to my knowledge, is the only craft beer bottle shop west of 4th Street. Along Central Avenue or in that corridor. And we also, to my knowledge, are the only folks in town doing cured meat. So like I said before earlier, we do all the bacon. And so the bacon that is served at Barbecue and at Comfort is cured and smoked at Provisions. We're also doing pork loin, roast beef, pastrami. We're going to start doing corned beef here pretty soon. And then another thing I'm really excited about, because I've never even made it or tasted it, is a Dutch loaf where you take ground pork, ground beef, and a mixture of spices and curing salt, and then smoke that in a like a loaf pan. And once it's cooled, it's like a deli version of meatloaf. And so with all these meats, we make sandwiches, and we make our own pickles, we make our own mustard. And so the word Provisions really comes into play with us selling the hot sauce from Comfort, the barbecue sauces. So it's meant to be a place where you can come and a grocery store of sorts, but only of products that we make from scratch.
It's amazing. What did you say that thing was called that you're trying?
Oh, a Dutch loaf.
Dutch loaf. Will it be available maybe by next Sunday to buy?
No, I wouldn't say it's going to be available by next Sunday. Okay. No, it'll be a little bit of time.
Okay. And then what's to come for the Creamery? What are your plans? I mean, we're sitting here right now. It looks like it's a bit of ways from actually being open for business. But what do you have on deck?
We're hoping to open in a couple weeks. The theme here is sweet and savory with dessert Belgian waffles and homemade ice creams. We'll have 6 to 8 flavors available. Right now, we're going to start at the gate with 2 standards, vanilla and chocolate, and those will be kind of our spin on those flavors. But then, you know, I mentioned earlier the salted chocolate chip, a honey thyme lavender ice cream, a peanut brittle ice cream. And we want to be seasonal with those 6 variable flavors and do things that you can't really just go to the grocery store and buy a honey lavender ice cream. You know, we want to do flavors that you can't just go get anywhere else. And then the marrying of those 2 ideas of, you know, having a ready-made waffle, then the different toppings that we can offer, and then this unique ice cream, like, you can do a lot of stuff with that, you know, making our own waffle cones, making milkshakes. So with a lot of the restaurants we're trying to do is identify areas that we have to rely on someone else and then take that over and supply the rest of the restaurant. So the bacon is kind of the lead example, but the mustard and the pickles, those are used in all 3 restaurants right now as well. So the ice cream that's made here also be served there. So after this is going and everything else, I think our next area to tackle would be bread, but that is a very ambitious goal, so I we'll see if that works out.
Yeah, that was kind of my next question. I mean, 4 businesses,
uh-huh,
a wife, a 9-month-old.
Yeah.
Are are one of your parents a cyborg? Or like, how do you, like, that is some crazy time management.
So I've learned to be pretty productive, but again, Urban's not about Andy. There's so many people involved and so many people that are really dedicated to what we're trying to do. And I couldn't do it if I didn't have the staff in place that I do. Comfort and Barbecue, they have two great general managers, Sean and Caleb. They have two great kitchen managers, both named Chris. They work extremely hard. I trust them completely. And it's to the point now for Barbecue beer dinners. We have a beer dinner every month where we have three different shifts of 12 people come in. We just serve five plates with five beers, and we pair everything together. I used to always make the recipes for those dinners. And when Comfort opened, I didn't have as much time to devote to that. And we shut them down for like 2 months. And then the staff at Barbecue asked if we can bring them back. And they were going to be responsible for all the recipes. And so we did a trial run, and I liked what I tasted. And so they've been running them totally on their own for 6-7 months now. And I think in some ways they're doing far better than I ever could have done. And so I think it's great to see the businesses grow and the community embrace them, but it is super gratifying to let control go over and then see them do it better than I think I could have.
Amazing. God, I love that. That, I mean, that's really cool, because I think what happens with a lot of business owners that I've talked to over the years, I mean, they just don't sleep. You know, they just constantly look like they just, you know, they've had 5 hours of sleep the past whole week, mm-hmm. and they're just sweating and killing themselves over everything. But this is amazing. I'm really glad that that you are on, because I think that it's hopefully it'll be educational for people that are, you know, maybe owning a business that just like they can't find time for life. I think this is an amazing model that you've created. I guess one last question is, you know, all four of them, you were actually on the phone when I got here and you were talking about the square footage of each. So they're all under 2,000 square
yep.
feet. Maybe you can't, you don't have the ability to keep the quality high and make bigger places, but I'm assuming you've probably heard, especially for Brew and Barbecue, that maybe one complaint is like people wish that they could go more often, but it's always full, which is awesome for you.
Yeah, it's a shotgun bar, and we finally got the space next door to it, and so we're going to be able to expand and have a traditional dining room that'll fit 4 tops and 8 tops. And maybe you weren't going here with your question, but yeah. I'm going to take it there anyways. Of, you know, one day do we want to have a place that is a lot bigger? That intimidates the crap out of me. Mm-hmm. Like, I look, so Bella Brava here on Beach Drive, my wife and I went in there once on 4th of July. It was packed to the gills. We could only found 2 spots at the bar. We were in and out of there with a meal that we were satisfied with in 30 minutes. That is a whole other game. Like, I was thoroughly impressed with the efficiency of how they run that place. Now, can you have a place that is totally food-focused and still deliver that efficiency? Yes. I don't know if I know how to do it yet. You know, that's a whole other ball game. What I also like about the smaller places is it's less exposure to risk, because if things don't work out, you don't have a big millstone around your neck. But I think that the real reason why I'm very hesitant to go into a large space is what I love most about Barbecue, and what I really enjoy about Provisions is it has soul. I like seeing imperfections. You know, in the beginning, I took a lot of pride that everything in Barbecue, for the most part, I built. And I could point out all the mistakes, but it didn't really bother me, because it's not some commercial contractor coming in doing it. You know, like, you're talking to the guy that made the recipes and that built the furniture you're sitting on and is serving you now. And there's a lot to appreciate about that. And it's very nostalgic, kind of going back to that kind of history thing. But most of all, that's the basis of community. You know, I don't want to create just restaurants. I want to create taverns, because there's something associated with that word tavern, where that's where the people used to come and just converse about community matters. And every spot that we create, we want to not lose touch with that. That we want to be a place where you see your neighbor, you see people that you know, and that you know the staff. And I worry that in a larger space, you kind of lose that a bit.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I'm sure you've heard that before, but this is kind of why I want to do these podcasts, is to give you like the opportunity to express a long form answer. Mm-hmm. I'm sure if you ever get that question when you're busy and you've got a million things going on, you can't sit there and explain that. But that's really cool. I did think of one more question. I always mm-hmm. do this. I say one last question, then I think of something else while I have you. You mentioned earlier about you know, going up to Savannah and seeing a recipe, and you came back and kind of changed yours up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Through feedback and through Yelp reviews, when you do take some criticisms and say maybe there is some truth there, have you changed anything based on enough people in a review saying, this is my complaint, X, Y, or Z?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Not only changing things off of review, feedback, but over time. So like initially, the whole point and flat thing I was talking about with the brisket, we didn't used to smoke it like that. It's when you're in the middle of something and you see it day after day after day, you start to somewhat see it in a different way and realize things that you didn't realize before. So we've changed our fried chicken recipe at Comfort. I don't know how many people really know that, mm-hmm. but we've changed the way we prepped it. That's, I think, really improved the product. And granted, we already won the Best of the Bay Awards for the fried chicken, but now I think it's even better. So that's awesome. And initially we had a grilled pork chop on the menu, but it was tough to eat because the way that it was plated. And so we changed that and actually took it off the menu. There's always things, that we're tweaking, and like the beer dinners, we use those as an opportunity to try a dish out and get feedback from the folks that are there. Or if we want to put something on special, we'll make a couple of plates, send it out to customers for free and ask, what do you think about this? Do you like it? Do you know? You know, like, what would you want changed about it? I think that is so important to just ask people. It's basically running a prototype, you know, and something that my professors and my graduate program really stress to me is you have all these entrepreneurs that will go out there and invest a ton of money and a ton of time and never try to prove their concept. So if I wanted to make Urban Brew and Barbecue today and make all these recipes, there's no guarantee that anybody's going to like them. So how do you solve that? Before you sign a lease, before you do anything, work on some recipes and then ask family and friends if they like it. Now they're going to have a bias, so you got to kind of take that in hand. And then you go ask perfect strangers to try the food and see what they really say, because they're going to be a lot more honest with you. And if you can't get past that step, then why would you invest however many dollars, as well as sign your name to personal guarantees, if you don't even know if you have the core thing solved yet?
Man, that's really cool. You're going to kill me, but I have another question.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
All right. So this is pretty topical, because probably you, more than anybody else, I would imagine, has a pretty strong opinion on this one way or another. The issue of the baseball team. So you've got four businesses. I would imagine you definitely see a spike during games just because there's so many more people in the area. What are your thoughts on the Rays and moving and all that fun stuff?
So there's only 32 teams in the league, right?
30 in baseball.
30? Okay, yeah. 30. 32 in NFL. So there's only 30 cities in the country that have a baseball team. Actually, less than that, because New York has two and all these other things. So there's very few cities that have a baseball team, so we're very fortunate, and that does bring a certain cachet to the city. So from a marketability standpoint of the city, I don't want to see the team leave. In terms of strictly from the lens of a business owner that's in the area, opening day, Red Sox series, Yankee series, those increase business. The team is there 81 days a year. I would say probably 80% of those games sometimes hurt business more than they help, because people won't want to go to that area because there's a game and they think there's gonna be a lot of people there, and then there's not a lot of people there.
Yeah.
So your regulars that would come during dinner, they avoid it because they don't want to deal with the traffic, but then there's no traffic because nobody's going to the game. So if I had to put a flag in the ground, like, not like anybody, not my yeah. opinion doesn't matter on it, but I would like to see that area utilized for a convention center. City of St. Pete has a ton to offer. We don't have anywhere to house large corporations that want to send their folks out for a nice time, but also to, you know, have some team functions. It could also be used as a mall or living quarters, whatever. Something that's going to produce 365 days a year versus 81. And we have a large enough area that I think we could fit the Rays somewhere else in a better facility that's a better experience for the people going to the games. So that would be my pie in the sky dream.
Yeah, that's interesting. I couldn't agree more. I've actually been to all 30 baseball stadiums. It was kind of like a hobby.
That's awesome.
That I took on for a few years, and I finished it in 2014. So they are definitely, it's not a great facility. That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, that was the first time I ever went to a baseball game inside.
Yeah. And on my own personal ranking, again, nobody cares about my opinion, but 1 through 30, they were a whopping 29th.
Who's 30th?
Oakland.
Yeah, yeah, that's a pretty bad stadium.
That's a football stadium that tries to play baseball inside. So I guess with that opinion, do you find like maybe some of your fellow neighboring business owners share it or kind of are on the opposite
side?
Well,
I know Fergs doesn't share it. Because Fergs kills it. He does great with baseball.
That's true.
No, I think some of the folks that are on the 1400 blocks from there, I think it really does benefit them. I don't want to put words in other people's mouths.
Yeah, of course, and not specifically, you know? Just a general. I'm sure you've had that conversation with other people.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of areas, we're in a fortunate enough time right now with St. Pete that I think a couple of years ago for downtown Yankees coming to town makes an impact. Now, nobody knows because it's busy anyways. There's a line out the door on Beach Drive. There's, you know, all of Janus Block and the surrounding areas. So they don't need baseball to bring that revenue anymore. I could be totally wrong. I don't you know the ins and outs of their businesses. Right. But it appears to me that downtown's busy regardless.
I agree. It's amazing I moved here 9 years ago, 2007, and I worked for the Rays. And St. Pete was a place that I came to work and immediately left. It was literally Tropicana Field and Fergs. Mm-hmm. The end. And it's absolutely insane what it's become. So speaking of what it's become, you've obviously contributed a lot to that. Urban Creamery hopefully opening in mid-early February.
Mid-February.
And then what? I guess you'll be on to Urban Bakery after that?
we'll focus a lot more on the catering side and growing the catering business. And then after that, probably growing facets of each business. So like the bakery probably is a facet of one of our existing businesses. And that's, yeah, we'll see if that happens. And then after that, I think it would be identifying other areas. And if we have anybody internally that really wants to open up a place and maybe do another barbecue somewhere, you know, somewhat close by in the county or maybe south of the Skyway, which is at the sea.
It's amazing because I assumed you might tell me you kind of have a cap like you're about to be done, but it sounds like the possibilities.
So the problem with what I'm passionate about is I'm not passionate about maintaining. I'm passionate about building. And that's probably why it is easier for me to set a process up and identify someone that has the right characteristics and the right personality to maintain it and let them go with it. Because that's not what gets me up in the morning. And so, you know, much to my wife's chagrin, we've got another four concepts in the hopper that we'd love to do. We just got to find the right time. And we had a space lined up that we were heavily considering taking, but it was just been asinine to do it.
Yeah. Wow. Well, this has been by far our longest episode. I could keep asking you a last question, but I'll let you go. Follow you guys on social media for anybody listening. I mean, there's four different brands, and you have Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Yeah, we have all three.
No Snapchat yet?
No, no, not yet.
I'm with you on that. I refuse to download Snapchat. So you can also follow Yelp Tampa Bay at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well. No Snapchat. And follow Genghis Flan, the band, the theme song that you are hearing right now as we play out. And join us next time. We have another very special guest coming up in the next week or two. But you're going to have your hands full listening to 50 minutes of audio from Andy Salyards. Yeah, it flew by. Thanks so much again, and we'll see you next time.